I spent a lot of time really creating what I consider to be these different worlds of sound. And there's all these different influences from New Orleans, gospel music, jazz, hip-hop, soul music, and blending all those things into one sound has been a process of going through different sounds and investing in them.
Jonathan Batiste, sometimes affectionately called J-Bat within the jazz community. See him live for 5 minutes and you know he was born to perform. But to John, being on stage isn't just a performance. It's communication, with the musicians, of course, but also the audience. He likes to break that fourth wall, invite the audience on stage, or take the crowd with him, parading down the street. This is Jazz Night in America, and I'm Christian McBride. You might be familiar with John Batiste from television. He's the musical director for CBS's The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. 5 seasons and counting, we've all watched as he's carved his own place in the lineage of late night.
It was quite a ride when we first started doing the show. In particular, I think it's very special as a musician because these are environments that we're not usually a part of.
Welcome, Stephen Colbert!
There's a great community of talent at the show that's become a real family, you know, especially now we're doing a show virtually. Unfortunately, we have to do that in these times, but it's something that I feel very fortunate to be a part of.
Later this hour, we'll dig into John's work on the show and look back on the impact jazz has had on late night. 4 months before the coronavirus shut down concerts all around the world, Jazz Night held a special taping in New York City. Live at the Club Car at the McKittrick Hotel, home of Sleep No More, John Batiste and friends, John on piano and vocals, Givton Jelen on trumpet, John Lampley on trumpet and tuba, Eddie Barbash on alto saxophone, Tavon Pennicott on tenor saxophone, India Owens on bass, Joe Saylor on drums, and Nega Santos on percussion. Let's head right into John's set. This is Prince. Thank you. John Batiste and Friends with Prince. John says the main melody has a youthful quality to it.
You can hear that. Somebody playing a fiddle or something. The traditions of bluegrass music, all the Anglo-Celtic music and the early gospel music, they were connected spiritually, but weren't connected publicly.
John says that it's his responsibility to connect different traditions.
Because there's nothing new under the sun. What is new is the idea of repurposing, reinterpreting, finding a deeper understanding of the things that have led to our being. And then that leaves the next generation with the responsibility of going deeper into all of the things that we discovered.
And it's in John's blood, this tradition of taking, making, and passing on to the next one. He came up in Kenner, Louisiana, just outside of New Orleans. He's a part of the vast Batiste musical family tree. When he was a kid, John could be found on stage hitting a cowbell with the Batiste Brothers Band. John looks back with gratitude on the hours he logged with Crescent City Elders. They were like mythological figures. You heard about them before you met them. Like saxophonist Kid Jordan, the late pianist Ellis Marsalis, composer Harold Batiste, no relation, and clarinetist Alvin Batiste, John's uncle.
For me, it was Alvin who I had the deepest connection with. We were born just a few days apart, many years apart, but in the same month, there was a spiritual underpin to our relationship that he believed and I believed.
Each elder seemed to hold a different jazz philosophy, their own way to think about the music.
So if you're learning how to play, Alvin's philosophy would be to take everything, turn it inside out, then recreate it.
Ellis's philosophy, to examine music from different vantage points.
If it's musical, you can study it from the perspective of philosophy. You can study it from the perspective of visual arts. You can study it from the perspective of physics. And then you can understand it from a place of integrity, even if no one around you understands it. You'll stand in that. So there's a certain sort of steadfast intellectual rigor there.
That intellectual rigor, mixed up with the energy of New Orleans street music, stayed with John when he moved to New York City to study at Juilliard. He was quickly noticed and hired by Cassandra Wilson, Wynton Marsalis, and the late Roy Hargrove. John remembers one gig with Roy when moments before the show, Roy taught him a brand new song called Soulful. They played it that night.
What beautiful chords, man. Those chords are something else.
A decade later, John was leading his own band. They were making a live record at the Village Vanguard when he received the news. Roy Hargrove had died. John thought back to that song, Soulful.
I didn't actually plan on recording it when we had the Vanguard sessions, but speaking to the power of that song and how much of a part of the lineage has become already, everyone in the band vaguely knew the song enough for me to teach it to them in the way Roy taught it to me in the dressing room before we went out to play it that night after we found out the news that Roy had passed. We lift up the legacy of those who have taught us and lifted us over the years. It's a spiritual passing of the torch.
We're glad that John played Soulful for our live concert recording. It features one of Roy Hargrove's mentees, Givton Jellin, on trumpet. Let's hear it. Thank you. That was a Roy Hargrove composition called Soulful, played here by John Batiste and friends. It featured John on piano and Gifton Jelen on trumpet. About 5 years ago, John Batiste began inciting what he calls love riots. He'd do them all over New York. Instead of staying on one street corner, he and his band would walk around, take the audience with them, removing that barrier of performer and spectator.
We played in the subways every night for free. For fun, and also to congregate with people and create a sense of community, which at a time like now is even more precious because we're social distancing and we're apart. But the idea of actually being able to create community through music was a philosophy. We brought that spirit with us wherever we went. It sort of became a version of jazz, but almost like jazz 2.0.
The band grew in size and fan base. John got to tour the world for the first time as a band leader. As he got more popular, J-Bat began to dress more freely, donning canary yellow or fuchsia suits with his Nike Air Jordans. And his musical identity evolved. John was mixing the classical phrasing of Debussy, the boogie-woogie of Fats Domino, and the intensity of McCoy Tyner. Never sacrificing the integrity of the music or the party. So, John had refined his social music in the streets, on stages at festivals and academic conferences, and he was about to have the opportunity to bring it to millions, 5 nights a week. In 2015, he got what many musicians would call the dream gig, hired to be the musical director for the newly forming Late Show with Stephen Colbert.
How about John Batiste and Stay Human, everybody? They are the beating heart and the spirit of this show.
Since the beginning of Late Night, the house band and the role that leader plays has impacted the success of a show, from Doc Severinsen and Branford Marsalis on The Tonight Show, to Michael Wolff on The Arsenio Hall Show, even Dr. Billy Taylor, who served as MD on The Jack Frost Show. We'll peel back some of that history when Jazz Night in America returns. I'm Christian McBride.
Why you gotta be like that? It's all right.
Welcome back to Jazz Night in America. I'm Christian McBride.
Back, everybody. Let's hear it for John Batiste and Stay Human.
Pianist John Batiste took on a new level of exposure when he joined The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. It got us thinking about the influence of jazz musicians in creating the sound of late night TV.
I don't think that it's a coincidence that jazz has been a central element of late night bands stretching all the way back to the earliest days of The Tonight Show, Johnny Carson's band, Jay Leno's band, Arsenio Hall's band, to David Letterman's bands at NBC and CBS, to Stephen Colbert's backing band that John leads on CBS.
That's Eric Deggans, NPR's TV critic and longtime journalist who's covered TV and music and pop culture. He helped walk us through some of this history. Let's roll back to the 1950s, shall we?
The National Broadcasting Company presents... Tonight, starring Steve Allen.
When The Tonight Show started, particularly in the 50s in New York, jazz was the coolest music form that was happening in the city.
Steve Allen was a jazz fan. He sat at the piano as he spoke to the camera. He didn't have a house band as the first host of The Tonight Show on NBC, but he loved to feature jazz front and center.
Here we come down the steps of the world-famous jazz spot, Birdland.
Deggans describes how, in 1962, when Johnny Carson took over The Tonight Show, he had a big band.
Johnny was a drummer. He was very interested in jazz. He was a huge fan of Buddy Rich.
Mr. Buddy Rich!
All right.
They would often have these segments where Buddy would come on and play.
Johnny's band was first led by pianist Skitch Henderson, then later by trumpeter Doc Severinsen.
That whole idea of a band leader who is the charismatic leader of a big band, that's not a new thing, of course. He just brought that concept to late night television. Doc Severinsen's big thing was that he always wore really flashy, crazy suits.
How did this whole thing start? You're famous for your outfits.
Actually, Arsenio, it started with a wild necktie.
Doc Severinsen, from a 1992 interview on the Arsenio Hall Show.
I'm a bit of a rebel.
Thank you for being here. You're a very slippery, but classy interview.
The Arsenio Hall Show aired in the same time slot as The Tonight Show.
Arsenio creates this show that is rooted in black culture and that is rooted in featuring the kinds of performers who were, frankly, too black to get on The Tonight Show.
Jazz pianist Michael Wolff was their musical director, and he brought in a strong R&B component. In 1992, when Johnny Carson retired, Jay Leno became the host of The Tonight Show. For the inaugural episode, Jay introduced the world to his musical director, saxophonist Branford Marsalis.
There's a clip of the very first Tonight Show with Jay Leno as host and Branford Marsalis as musical director. Branford comes down and he sits beside Jay Leno's desk and they have a little conversation.
Remember, I said, you didn't want this gig at first. Remember you said that?
Yeah, I said, no. I said, thank you, but no.
And then Branford told his bandmates that he had gotten this call from Jay Leno, and they were like, are you crazy? You know, go call him back.
Called you back, said, yeah.
Yeah, well, this is good. When I told you could do the kind of music you want to do, sounds good to me.
So already, you get the sense that he wasn't necessarily all that fired up about doing it.
It's reported that Branford would push his band like it was a gig in a concert hall or nightclub, that The Tonight Show was a platform to continue to deal with the music. Eric Deggans says it can be tricky for some artists to navigate the waters of network television expectations. It wasn't long before Branford would step aside and pass the gig to his guitarist, Kevin Eubanks, who would lead the band for the next 15 years.
So I think ultimately that was the problem when Branford was serving as musical director on The Tonight Show band. He's an artist, but the musical director for a TV show has to be something else.
1 year after Leno went on the air on NBC, CBS welcomed Late Night with David Letterman in a competing time slot.
Each new show is a reflection of where jazz kind of sits in the public sensibility. Letterman is a reflection of the fact that, like, the cool form of jazz is contemporary jazz now.
Paul Schaefer, who had already been working with Letterman for years, was the musical director. Schaefer's World's Most Dangerous Band showed us how a late night band could double as a backing band for the show's musical guests. Schaefer loved backing all kinds of genres, including jazz.
We really did get many of the icons of jazz come and play with us, like Miles and Diz.
When Letterman retired from The Late Show, comedian Stephen Colbert became the new host, and Paul Schaefer passed the torch to Jon Batiste. Schaefer says he couldn't be more proud.
The thing about Jon Batiste coming to late night television is that he figured out how to bring his jazz feel onto the show and it sounds absolutely like it belongs.
We put the headphones on Schaefer to play him our recording of John's concert in New York City.
When I heard the concert that was recorded at the McKittrick, it really was the best that I could have imagined. It was in that bag, beautiful, like a What Would Alan Toussaint Be Doing Now sort of thing. All kinds of wonderful influences. It reaffirmed what a big fan I am.
Let's get back into that music. This is John's take on If You're Happy and You Know It.
If you're happy and you know it, clap your hands. If you're happy and you know it, clap your hands. If you're happy and you know it, and you really want to show it. If you're happy and you know it, clap your hands. If you're happy and you know it, say, oh yeah.
Woohoo! Ah, woohoo!
extra point.
Recorded live at the Club Car at the McKittrick Hotel in New York City. That was a John Batiste original called Power. When Jazz Night in America returns, the kid from Kenner comes to TV. Plus more from my concert with John. As they say, don't touch that dial. I'm Christian McBride. Thank you. Welcome back to Jazz Night in America. I'm Christian McBride, and that was John Batiste playing Thelonious Monk's Round Midnight at the Club Car at the McKittrick Hotel in New York City. In 2015, when John started his gig in Late Night, TV critic Eric Deggans wasn't too sure if it was going to work out.
Frankly, I'm just glad they found a role for him that works on the show, because when he first debuted, I was deathly afraid that he was going to get fired. I felt like a lot of Colbert's interactions with John early on was Colbert turning to John and saying something to him and then expecting him to be funny. As smart and as cool as he is, he couldn't in that moment just say something funny. Like, that's not him.
Are you happy here at the Late Show? Is everything cool?
Oh, yeah, of course I am. I get to meet incredible people, get to play the music I love every night. And they got them free Pop-Tarts in the break room.
One of the things when I got to the show is I felt that external forces, for lack of a better term, you know, focus groups and things like that, were trying to pigeonhole John into a traditional role.
Chris Licht is the executive producer and showrunner of The Late Show. He was brought on board in the middle of the first season and helped to rework John and Stephen's on-camera relationship.
What's been wonderful about their relationship is that it's an organic friendship. You know, my job is to give it that space and say, there's something here. Stephen, you saw something in this. I see it in the interaction between the two of you. So let's let it develop organically and take the pressure off of it. And I'm really pleased with how that has evolved.
Stephen is a mentor to me. He's a friend. He's a collaborator.
Also at the beginning, John expected to be just the music guy.
I've been left to kind of craft my domain, which is not what I'd expected going into this.
Like use his new platform to shine a light on jazz legends. Folks like Wayne Shorter and the Heath Brothers.
You played with John Coltrane on his first record.
Yeah, I did.
And John's worked on a number of sketches. He's even interviewed Congressman John Lewis. His segments that reference jazz also poke fun at how serious we in the scene can take ourselves.
New Orleans is known for its music, zydeco, bounce, but none more so than jazz, which was invented when a composer's sheet music was eaten by a gator, and so he just made a bunch of stuff up.
And remember, when we see the commercial breaks at home, the studio audience is getting a hearty dose of John Batiste. Chris Licht says that one of his greatest joys is watching the audience get down to John's Jazz 2.0 during those breaks.
He's really something special. He's a unicorn. I think he is will end up being one of the most transformative musicians ever. Take it out of the late night space. He's just so visionary and accomplished and collaborative.
TV critic Eric Deggans says what John is doing goes beyond entertainment.
The best late night bands don't just play music that's popular. They have a sound and an attitude that is unique, that is compelling, that is forward looking, and that is kind of cool. It's important to see that jazz is still a crucial part of the band that backs the most watched late night show on television, Stephen Colbert's show. And it's important that John, as a young, vital, growing artist, is at the center of that dynamic.
So, as John continues his many lives, comedy on TV, fashion for GQ, it all comes back to that human spirit, social music. Something that can be most felt, most vibrant, live in person.
I think that before music was something that we bought and sold, music was really a part of the fabric of everyday life. It was a part of the way that we would interface with each other. There's so many different forms of communal social music. And New Orleans is just one brand of what has survived into the modern era of music for life. Music when someone dies, music when people are born, music for the real purpose of what I think God had made music to be, for us to connect and to express things and to be a time capsule of our collective wisdom.
Let's go out with more music from our concert recorded at the Club Car at the McKittrick Hotel in New York City. John on piano, Gifton Jellin on trumpet, John Lampley on tuba, Eddie Barbash on alto sax, Tavon Pennicott on tenor sax, India Owens on bass, Joe Saylor on drums, and Nega Santos on percussion. This is Order. Thank you. Jazz Night in America is a production of WBGO, Jazz Lincoln Center, and NPR Music. The music was recorded and mixed by David Talitson. As we said at the top, our concert fell on John's 33rd birthday. So we surprised him with a custom birthday cake. Check it out and the full concert film of this show on our website or our YouTube channel. This week's episode was written and produced by Alex Arif. Shout out to Colin Marshall, Julia Casey, and Adam Sensenbrenner. Our team includes Sarah Giletti, Trevor Smith, and Sarah Kirsten. Katie Simon is our senior producer. Saraya Muhammad is our project manager. Executive producers are Gabrielle Armand and Anya Grundman. Lauren Anke is the senior director of NPR Music, and I'm Christian McBride.